If you hire migrant workers under the accredited employer work visa, then some major changes were brought in to shake up the immigration space. And I can tell you that it's left a lot of migrant workers and employers very frustrated. If you hire skilled migrants, then stick around to see how this may have impacted you. Welcome back to Lawlands. My name is Sanam and thank you so much for tuning in today. Look, I didn't think that when I started this podcast, if you asked me back then, hey Sanam, what do you think that you're actually going to be talking about? I would have said, you know, trial periods, probation periods, annual leave, the usual. I never in a million years would have thought that I would be speaking this much about immigration law. Believe it or not, immigration seems to be the hot button topic, and I thought, look, if this is the area that just never sleeps, then maybe this is what we need to be talking about. So, like I said in my intro, this has been a huge change on the 7th of April that's come out. Last week, everyone was wrapping their heads around it, really trying to understand what they need to do now moving forward. There's been a lot of setbacks created by this process or the change in process for employers and employees. So we'll get into all of that. But before we do, it's been a while and you know what time it is. It's time for Laughs with Lawlands, where I give you a dry joke in these episodes. 70% of the earth is water and virtually none of it is carbonated. So the earth is, in fact, flat. I tell you they're dry and I deliver on the dryness. So whether you believe that the earth is flat or round, there is definitely migrant workers from either across the globe or across the plane that need to travel to come to New Zealand. And this particular accredited employer work visa has been the bane of a lot of employers' existence. They've obviously rejigged the process a few years ago in the height of COVID. We saw that there was a lot of talk around becoming accredited, and then this new accreditation process came out. So we'll have a look at what the accreditation process essentially is, and I'll give you just a very high-level rundown. There is a lot of information out there on the Immigration New Zealand website, and I will be providing you with links to everything so that you're also aware of what you need to look out for. But generally, we know that the process first goes, you need to apply for accreditation. And that means that in order to tap into certain sectors of employees or people being able to come on an accredited employer work visa, that you need to follow this application process and meet these certain criteria. So the first one is to apply. Now, application process for the visa itself can take 12 weeks. For the accreditation for the employer can take 11 weeks, and then the job check process can take 9 weeks. It is not something where we're looking at, hey, I've got a job opening up, let me just recruit somebody and we'll get them in the next month or so. It's definitely not like that. It is a lengthy, lengthy process. And as we go through this episode, you will also hear me talk about how, unfortunately, this process will be extended because of these new changes that have come out on the 7th. You apply first. After you apply, you still got to advertise for the role. You've got to engage with work and income to do that now. We're back to base. We saw this come up in COVID, then get scrapped, but brought up again. Then after that, the third step is that once you've reached the accreditation and you've received that, then you apply for a job check. And basically a job check is where you ensure that there are no other New Zealanders that can do the job. So we used to call it labor market test, but it's a job check. And then from there, you look at telling the migrant worker that they need to apply. And in the fifth stage of the process, you are accredited. And then you need to also make sure that you need to keep up with your accreditation. So that may need to be renewed every 12 months. Now, this everybody generally knows, the process is there, it's the same. But what we don't know is the exact changes that have come up on the employer side and the visa holder side, so the employee side, which I will definitely get into in this episode. But before we get into it, I want to make sure that you have subscribed to the podcast and that you've jumped over and followed me on LinkedIn so that you get all of these key updates right at your fingertips or your ears. Oh, and did you also know that I have a wait list? Now, I know when you hear wait list, you think, ugh, but I promise this will be well worth it because I tell you there's some interesting things brewing at LawLens and I'm really excited to roll them out. Don't miss out. Just jump on and quickly look in the description for that link. So, what are the changes for employees? People that hold an accredited visa will now face some challenges because of the recent announcement. So it's really important that people that are visa holders, so I'm talking about you employees out there that have this visa, and even employers and HR professionals, if you know anyone on this visa, please be very mindful of what the circumstances are now. So we'll look at length of stay first. Before, when I say before the 7th of April announcements, we saw that there was a length of 5 years that someone could stay in New Zealand if they had the ANSCO level 4 or 5 skilled occupations. Essentially, the acronym ANSCO stands for Australian and New Zealand Standard Classification of Occupations. It's a system that categorizes all the jobs across Australia and New Zealand based on the set of skills that they have or their skills, and it's used for collecting data on the particular occupations. It's used for government programs and for training. So usually you'll see this come up if you're in the immigration space and you're hiring migrant workers, you'll be asked for the ANSCO maybe identification number or where it falls within that level 4 or 5 skill set. So I'll be using ANSCO quite a lot, but you know what it's meant to be. In terms of the length of stay, like I said, it used to be 5 years. Now, on or after the 7th of April or before the 21st of June from last year, so 2023, skill level 4 and 5 jobs, according to that ANSCO code, that are paying at or above the required visa wage of $29.66. So if people are being paid at or above that median wage, that means that the accredited visa, the person that's on that accredited visa, won't be able to stay for 5 years. It is now reduced to 2 years. They do have the ability to apply for one more year, but that requires a new job check to be done. That means that the total time workers can stay in New Zealand on one or more of those accredited visas is now technically reduced to 3 years. And after that 3 year period, it means that visa holder, that worker, will need to leave New Zealand, and it would be for a 12 month period that they need to leave before they can apply for another visa to enter back into New Zealand. So a major change there. Major change, that security of 5 years does not exist for certain level 4, level 5 categories, and you'll really have to make sure that you look into them. Now, another major change is the minimum standard of English that's required. This was a huge shakeup, absolutely huge, because people that are now applying for skill level 4 or 5 jobs, they need to prove that they meet an English language standard test. There are some exemptions, for example, people that are traveling as a partner or parent of the person on the accredited visa or the accredited applicant. And there are some other exemptions as well. For example, the citizenship of the country that you're from or where you've studied. So these are all critical. I think the list had like Canada or some other countries on there where they said that causes an exemption. So the person doesn't need that English standard test to be completed. So the last change that I can think of that's quite major for people that hold this visa, so these are the workers, is that the pathways to residency have changed. So the skills residency pathways have changed. And it seems like for certain industries, you do not have a pathway anymore. So for example, truck drivers, bus drivers, even something like an aircraft refueler, you don't have the ability to apply for a visa that will lead you into a pathway to residency. And I would highly recommend that you go ahead and have a look at the list and see how this applies to you. Now, the major changes for employers, this is insane. There is a lot of obligations now placed on the employer. I think to a certain extent, some of these existed before, but now we're looking at quite a lot more. And I was on some forums over the course of last week, just looking at the different changes. I was looking at the agricultural industry, and I was looking at it from the perspective of the education sector and the healthcare sector. And it's been really interesting to see the difference in perspectives. Definitely can say that from an agricultural perspective, no one's happy on that side because it does create a lot of barriers and a lot of hurdles. So in terms of the changes for employers, there is a raft of changes, so bear with me. Let's take a deep breath because it's quite a lot. The first thing that I could see was the minimum skills requirement. So before sending a job token, an employer will generally check the applicant and see if they meet that specification that's mentioned in the job check application. So they check all of that. Now that the changes have been made, this is really going to shake up things. So the new changes mean that employers must now take reasonable steps. That's one. To ensure that migrant workers are suitably qualified and meet a minimum skills and experience threshold before offering the job. I'll just go over it again. Mean that employers need to take reasonable steps to ensure that migrant workers are suitably qualified and meet a minimum skills and experience threshold before offering the job. Very different. Before, I would have said it's much broader. We're talking about it being a lot more stringent now in terms of making sure that you've covered off everything. I went into Immigration New Zealand's website to look at what reasonable steps would be or how you would look at the suitability of somebody that's qualified, right? How can you do that with the migrant worker? The suggestions that they've made is that you could ask, and this is coming from Immigration New Zealand themselves, you could ask the applicant to do a practical test or to demonstrate their knowledge in a job interview. So maybe you could probe and prod and get a bit of understanding of what they know and what they understand. I don't know how well you could really do a practical test or ask them to demonstrate. Now, of course, if it is something that's a lot more hands-on and requires knowledge of certain terminology and processes, then yeah, you could give them a more of a practical test and ask them to go through a bunch of questions and answer it. Otherwise, you can ask them to demonstrate their knowledge. But like I said, this is a hurdle where you're going to have to see how this can fit in with the industry that you're in and the type of roles that you are trying to recruit for. You could also ask them to provide documents that support their resume or CV. For example, maybe they have certain qualifications that they've done or certain certificates. You can ask for all of that information and that will allow you to have a better understanding of their suitability for that particular role. Now, what I would say out of all of that, document, 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 document. There is nothing more that I can say than document, document, document. This is one thing I think I've noticed about the accreditation process is that you need to make sure you've got every box ticked, everything written down, and every reason why you have chosen this particular candidate and this particular migrant worker. Now, employers who have accredited or reaccredited from the 7th of April will need to do this. So they will need to take those reasonable steps to inquire about the migrant workers' skill sets and whether those skill requirements as part of the accreditation obligations are being met. And the next one is the labor market test. Now, we've heard about the labor market test, the job check applications, doing all of that stuff. Basically, the whole idea behind this test or the job check and doing the process is it's a mechanism to ensure that Immigration New Zealand is satisfied that there are no other candidates from New Zealand that are suitable or available for this position. Now, for the skill level 4 and 5 occupations as part of that ANSCO, it used to be that 14 days was the time frame that you needed to do the test and advertise. That has now changed. Now, employers need to lodge the vacancy with Work and Income for some skill levels 4 and 5 jobs. Plus, they would need to advertise the job nationally for at least 21 days. So not only is the work and income requirement there now, but you also need to make sure that you advertise the job nationally for at least 21 days. People always used to ask, where should I advertise? I used to get this question a lot. I would say you pick the widest reaching forums that you can, pick as many as you can, or pick the widest ones, but wherever you can advertise, put them up. have the job ad up there. Make sure you keep a note of everyone that's applying, why they're not suitable. Document, document, document everything. It's really critical for these application processes because I'm sure if you've been through it, then you know how hard it can be and you know how difficult it is to reapply after you've been rejected. Now, in terms of hours of work, this is another area that's changed as well. So from the 7th of April, meaning right now, any new visas that are going to be issued, any new accredited visas that will be issued, will have a condition requiring employers to employ migrants for at least 30 hours per week. If an employer does not provide at least 30 hours per week, then the accreditation can be revoked by Immigration New Zealand. The last change is to do with ending employment. Now, if an employee who's on this particular visa ends their employment, then the accredited employer they have to notify Immigration New Zealand within 10 working days. So you have business days, you have working days, but you need to let Immigration New Zealand know. Before the employee would leave, their visa conditions may have been tied to a particular employer, and then they would go and try to vary those visa conditions. Now, this was before the accreditation really kicked off and became a thing. But now the rules are very much set that the employer needs to notify Immigration New Zealand. So, a lot to take in. You may be thinking, what else, Sanam? What else do you have? I feel like the bearer of bad news. Look, I wanted to give you some what else's in terms of key takeaways or things to just be mindful of, just as a reminder. First one is, I do this for you guys, so you don't have to worry about doing this, but I somehow managed to dig through the internet and find a link, and I'm pretty sure it's a reputable link, but it is to sign up for an Immigration New Zealand webinar where they go through all of the accreditation changes and how this will affect employers and employees. It's happening on the 17th of April, I believe. I will leave all the information in the description. Please feel free to sign up for that link. It does have limited spots, but it does say that the recording will be sent out. If you're in this space, you might as well hear it from the horse's mouth, for lack of a better phrase. On the 7th of April, with these changes that have come in, Immigration New Zealand has been very, very clear that unfortunately, the accreditation applications and the process will be taking much longer than it was before. I already went through the length of time in the beginning, and you may have been going, this is not great, but it will be getting much, much longer. So just sit tight. If you're going to have to go through it, get in early, get your applications done, and it's just going to be the ebbs and flows of going through this. Another key change that came up last week, which I posted about on my LinkedIn, was around Immigration New Zealand cracking down and starting to issue infringement notices for the following offenses. So I've done an episode on this already, and I will link that in the description. You absolutely should know about the offenses and what the fines are like and all of this information. So I will definitely link that for you. But just to recap, the offenses are if there's a breach of visa condition. So keep in mind that 30 hours per week is a clear example. Also, employing a person unlawfully in New Zealand. So if they don't have the legal rights to work in New Zealand, then they shouldn't be working for you. And also, immigration officers can now come in and they can ask for employment documents. If an employer fails to comply with the requirement to provide that document to them in that 10-day time frame, then the employer can be issued an infringement notice. And I want to just turn you back to last year. I did a quick legal update on the 29th of October. There was a major change that came in around not being able to use trial period clauses, meaning that your contracts and your employment agreements for those accredited employees after that date, the 29th of October, could not have a trial period clause included in them. So please keep that in mind. I will link the episode that I did as well for that, because it will severely slow down the process, which means that you as an employer will need to reapply potentially for accreditation. It could be seen as causing a breach, so you don't want to get into that shaky and tricky territory. Well, that is it from me, everyone. I hope that this kind of boiled down and brought in all of the key critical information that you needed to know. I know it's quite high level. Remember to subscribe to the podcast and follow me on LinkedIn because I post employment law updates and tips regularly. Also, if you haven't joined the waitlist, Lawlands has some big ideas cooking and there are some more services and offerings that I want to start rolling out. So get in early. All of the links are in the description. And thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in. Wherever you are, have a lovely day, night, evening, whatever it may be. And I'll catch you in the next one, everyone.